right, Mr. Morales Doyle, may I proceed?
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Patrick Morales Doyle on behalf of the City of Chicago. This is an interlocutory appeal of an order certifying two Rule 23B3 damages classes. For each class, the district court misconstrued the claims that were at issue, made legal errors in analyzing those claims, and failed to appropriately analyze Rule 23's predominance and adequacy requirements. There are some overlapping issues between the two cases, or between the two classes, excuse me. I'm going to try to focus, to try to make things clear, focus first on the tow class and then move on to the vehicle disposal class. But before I delve into the tow class, what is true of both classes is that Ms. Santiago seeks to pursue claims challenging the city's notice practices in situations where the unique facts of her case show she received actual timely notice, first of the impending tow of her vehicle, and then of the impending disposal of her vehicle. These facts unique to Ms. Santiago's tow and disposal not only make her an inadequate class representative to represent classes of vehicle owners on these claims, but they also illustrate the types of individual issues that would predominate if these claims have to be tried on a class-wide basis. For both classes, there's three themes that I probably want to touch on throughout the discussion today. First is the series of legal errors that the district court made that led it to forego the required rigorous analysis of predominance and adequacy. Second is that disconnect between Ms. Santiago's facts and the theories she's trying to pursue on behalf of the classes. And finally is Ms. Santiago's attempts to recast her claims or shift the legal theories she's pursuing, either to adjust to those inconvenient facts or to adjust to the errors in the district court's decision. Turning to the tow class, the tow class claims concern the city's practice related to the city's notice practices related to the city's towing of certain abandoned vehicles. The key fact central to this appeal for the tow class is that Ms. Santiago, through her daughter, Ms. Velez, received actual timely notice that her vehicle was going to be towed as abandoned. The pleaded claim she's attempting to pursue on behalf of the tow class is that the city violated her due process rights by providing her pre-tow notice via a sticker attached to her vehicle rather than via a mailed notice. But in her case, the sticker notice was undoubtedly effective. It got to the driver of the vehicle. It informed the driver of the vehicle of what to do to avoid the abandoned vehicle tow, which is by moving the vehicle within the time period. So, what the disconnect is between those facts and the due process claim she seeks to bring. For both of the requirements, Rule 23 requirements at issue for the tow class, predominance and adequacy, the court below, the district court, made a legal error that led it not to analyze that key fact and how that key fact of her actual notice affects the predominance and adequacy requirements. For the predominance requirement under Rule 23B3, the court accepted uncritically that what she was bringing was a facial challenge to the city's abandoned vehicle ordinance, but that's not the case. What she's challenging is this notice practice as applied to her. She's not raising a challenge to the ordinance at all. The ordinance doesn't speak to what notice is or is not required, nor does the due process clause require a state or a municipality to codify its notice practices. What the due process clause requires is reasonable notice under the circumstances, when there's going to be or there has been a deprivation of property. That's all it requires, reasonable notice under the circumstances.
Morales Doyle, can I ask you one question on this aspect?
Yes, Your Honor.
If what you just said over the last 30 seconds or so is correct, why haven't you argued that Ms. Santiago lacks Article III standing?
Your Honor, what we're here on is not on a, because we're here on a Rule 23 appeal, we're not here on the merits of her claim. The city did bring a motion to dismiss. Some of the claims were dismissed. These claims were not. I believe that the city has a strong defense that she either lacks standing or that the claim just fails on the merits because she wasn't negatively impacted by the government conduct that she's complaining about.
Let me ask the question a different way. If what you said is correct, that she received notice of the towing through her daughter's awareness of the sticker, Ms. Velez's awareness of the sticker, how do we have subject matter jurisdiction?
This court has subject matter jurisdiction pursuant to Rule 23, but I think Your Honor raises a good point. I don't think that she has standing to raise the due process claim that she's attempting to pursue because she received actual notice of the thing she's complaining about.
Right. The only way that I can think that she has standing is if in fact she brought a facial, well, and maybe not even then, but in fact she brought a facial challenge.
And I think we addressed that in the brief. She characterized her claim as a facial challenge, but initially, although I think in her response brief before this court, she pretty strongly backs off that position. It's not a facial challenge to the ordinance. The ordinance doesn't speak to the issue that she's complaining about, which is the method of notice. What she's done to try to save her claim and adjust to the district court's decision and adjust to the fact that Ms. Velez undisputedly testifies that she got the notice and reacted to the notice, is she tries to shift her claim from a method of notice claim, a complaint that the city violated due process by providing a sticker notice rather than a mailed notice, into a series of different claims about the content of the notice, essentially, or in some way, some challenge to the language in the ordinance. But the sort of logical flaw in shifting from a method of notice claim to a claim about the content of the notice is that that's the people impacted by those two potential claims are mutually exclusive. If your complaint is that the city should have provided you notice via the mail rather than via a sticker affixed to your car, then the necessary predicate to prevailing on that claim is that you didn't receive the notice that the city provided. You didn't get the sticker. You needed to mail it to me. It was unreasonable for you not to mail it to me. I didn't get the sticker and that injured me. Meanwhile, a challenge to the content of the notice, which is where she tries to shift her claims, necessarily requires that you received the sticker notice. Because in order to be injured by whatever is printed on the sticker notice, you obviously have to have picked it up and relied on it in some way or claim to have been misled by it in some way. And what's really interesting in this case is that Ms. Santiago doesn't fit into either of those two categories. Because not only did Ms. Velez receive the sticker notice, undisputedly, but she also understood what the sticker notice was telling her. And it was telling her to move her car within the time period. She understood that, and she claims to have done so. So she really has no, whether it's recast as a method of notice claim or the content of the notice, she does not have a notice due process claim. And what seems to be her underlying complaint with what happened here is some allegation that her vehicle was wrongfully towed. But that's not the claim that was certified as a class, and it's not a claim that could be adjudicated a class-wide. So that's a big problem for the tow class. And it's that fact and the district court's failure to grapple with the actual notice that led it to make errors in both that predominance and adequacy analysis. The court avoided it in the predominance analysis based on the assumption that she was making a facial challenge and the incorrect conclusion that with facial challenges, you don't need that individual issues are irrelevant. That's wrong, as we explained in our brief, but that was the mechanism that the district court used to avoid addressing the actual notice facts on the toe class. In the same way, it was this shifting claim and the court's misapplication of the Memphis Light decision about how, whether she could challenge the content of the notice, which again led the court not to address the elephant in the room, which is her actual notice, when analyzing the adequacy, when discussing the adequacy requirement of Rule 23. Given the time, I'm going to shift quickly to the vehicle disposal class. Again, like with the tow class, with the vehicle disposal class, it concerns the city's notice practices, not pre-tow, but the notice practices that precede the city's disposal of vehicles from, that are go unclaimed from the pound. And again, the key fact here is that through her daughter, Ms. Santiago had actual pre-disposal notice that her van had been impounded and would be disposed of if not reclaimed timely. It is uncontested that the city sent two notices to Ms. Santiago, and her claim is that the city didn't follow the didn't strictly comply with the statutory provisions by sending those two notices on the same day rather than on two different days. But in her case, regardless of when the two notices were mailed, regardless of the timing of the two notices, her daughter had actual notice that the van had been impounded. What is perhaps not surprising when thinking about the impoundment of a vehicle, the way her daughter testified that she realized the vehicle had been impounded is that she went outside and it wasn't there. I imagine that's often the case with a, with how someone first finds out that their vehicle was impounded. And she made phone calls and discovered where it was, and in fact visited the pound where it was located weeks before it was disposed of, but failed to bring the required authorization to get the vehicle out. And so again, that completely undermines her notice claim. There's a disconnect between the claim she's trying to pursue on behalf of the class and the facts of her own case. And again, the district court didn't address that fact, either in its predominance analysis or in its adequacy analysis. I see I'm over my time, and I'd like to reserve the rest for rebuttal if there are no further questions right now.
Good morning. My name is J.C. Zoll, and I represent plaintiff in this matter. I'll start by addressing the city's first point in their argument, and that is that their assertion, which we disagree with, by the way, but their assertion that Ms. Santiago received actual notice through her daughter. Lost on the city's argument is that this case is not just about lack of mailed notice. It's about lack of mailed notice and opportunity for a pre-deprivation hearing prior to the tow. That's what this case is about. That's why the Matthews test is involved, because the central issue in this case is whether before the city can seize a private citizen's vehicle, whether they need to provide a pre-deprivation hearing. And whether it's through the lack of mail notice or the failure to provide for a hearing in the sticker notice is immaterial. It simply does not provide for the class that was certified, those vehicle owners that lack current registration, a mechanism to contest the finding of abandonment. And if you look to the window sticker, which is, I believe, on page ID number 602 in the record, and compare that to the actual mailed notice that goes out to non-class members, those vehicle owners who have current registration, the mailed notice is at page ID number 606. They are substantively different. The mailed notice provides that for a hearing. And it states that if you do not show up to the hearing, we will deem your vehicle abandoned and tow it. The window sticker says nothing of the sort. It doesn't provide any information on how to obtain a hearing. The city's practice is to not provide for a hearing for vehicles that lack current registration. So all this claim about whether she saw the window sticker or not is a red herring, because irrespective of whether she saw it or not, it does not provide the information required under due process. And the holding in Memphis Light, which we believe is very, very close, if not entirely on point. In Memphis Light, there was a note.
Mr. Zolna, can I stop you there? I want to try to get a couple of things sorted out here. Did the district court properly treat the plaintiff's claims as facial?
Yes, it did, but our point is that it doesn't even really matter, because the constitutional standards are the same for a facial and an as-applied challenge. And as the district court properly held on page 11 of its class certification decision, even if Ms. Santiago received notice, she can still challenge the procedurally sufficiency of that notice. And that's what this case is all about. The procedural sufficiency of the notice provided in this case, and whether they had an opportunity.
So the challenge is not to the use of a sticker as opposed to mailing. The challenge is about the content of the notice, whether it comes on a sticker or in a letter.
It's both, because as we all know, and there's scores of cases that that have pointed this out. Mailed notice is a much more reliable manner of providing notice. And simply placing a sticker on a vehicle, which people oftentimes don't visit on a daily basis, or in the city of Chicago on a weekly basis.
If your challenge is facial to the use of a sticker, to satisfy the standard the Supreme Court announced in Salerno, you have to show, do you not, that there is no set of circumstances, there's not one plaintiff that you can even hypothesize whose due process rights would not have been violated because the city used a sticker. And that I don't see how you could possibly prevail there.
Well, the reason we had phrased this challenge as a facial challenge is simply because the tow ordinance itself, which is Municipal Code of Chicago 9-92-030D.
Are you sure that you presented it as a facial challenge? Because at the motion to dismiss stage, the judge treated it as applied at the 12B6 stage. And I have your complaint in front of me. And what you're talking about with respect to pre-deferation hearings and what have you, that, unless I'm missing it, you can point me to the paragraph. That's not the focus of your complaint.
Well, the reason we
Hold on. Am I mistaken about that? Have I misread your complaint?
No, Your Honor. And perhaps we didn't use those words, but we believe that the way it was presented as a challenge to this ordinance, and if I recall correctly, I don't have the complaint in front of me, but I do. I recall. In the wherefore clause, I believe we're seeking to declare the ordinance unconstitutional. That's my recollection.
Right, right. I get that at that level of generality. But whether you're talking about what precisely is unconstitutional, is it the use of a sticker as opposed to a piece of paper that goes through the U.S. mail? Or is it, no, it doesn't have anything to do with the use of a sticker. It's about the content of the notice.
It is both. And let me try to explain this, our position. Had the city mailed the exact replica of the sticker notice to Ms. Santiago, we would still view that as insufficient. Because the window sticker says nothing about how you can obtain a hearing or otherwise contest the finding of a bank.
And you would view that as facially unconstitutional. So in 100% of the cases with 100% of the plaintiffs that we could hypothesize, it's unconstitutional. So let me give you an example of the plaintiff I have in mind. A plaintiff who receives the exact content of the sticker in a letter and then calls the telephone number that's on the sticker and is in the letter under the hypothetical. How that's unconstitutional? So if you're reluctant to say, yeah, that's unconstitutional, which I would understand, then it seems it's entirely as applied. And if it's as applied, don't you run into the issue that Mr. Morales Doyle was pointing out with respect to Ms. Velez's interaction with Ms. Santiago about what she learned?
Well, even assuming it's as applied, it would still not matter because, as the district court properly found, even if they received the notice, they can still challenge the procedural sufficiency of the notice. And that kind of goes to my point of even if this window sticker was mailed to Ms. Santiago, we would still pursue a due process violation. And I do believe that if someone is sent a deficient notice that does not meet the standards of due process, that yes, that is unconstitutional. And if that individual happened to call the office or was able to avoid getting their car towed, well, then they haven't suffered as a result of the constitutional violation. But that doesn't mean that there wasn't a due process violation. That just means they're not members of the class.
Hold on a minute here. You may be digging yourself a hole you don't intend. How does your client have standing as a matter of Article 3? In other words, how do we have subject matter jurisdiction?
Because we're challenging the sufficiency of the notice, this notice practice in its totality. And again, what we're focused on here.
Hold on. If we're agreeing that Ms. Velez informed her mother, the named plaintiff, Ms. Santiago, of the sticker and of the pound issue, the disposal, how is your client injured?
Because even if she was alerted to this window sticker, there was no opportunity for a pre-deprivation hearing. That is the gist of our complaint.
Okay, what paragraph of your complaint? I have it in front of me. Well, you can. I don't want to consume all your time, but I don't read your complaint that way.
If you give me 30 seconds of additional time, then I could point you in the direction. But the case has always been about lack of notice and pre-hearing deprivation. And if you look at both the briefs on the motion to dismiss, and even the city acknowledges that this case is governed by the Matthews test, which that test is relevant to whether a pre-deprivation hearing is required under the circumstances. And that was the main issue on the motion to dismiss. It was the main issue decided in the ruling on the motion to dismiss. And we believe that that's not that we believe that that is what this case is all about. It's not just notice. It's not just notice that we thought your car was abandoned. It's the failure to provide for a pre-deprivation hearing. Before you take someone's property, the Constitution, and depending on the circumstances, requires a pre-deprivation hearing. And that's what this case is about. And if you do the Matthews test, which the district court did on the motion to dismiss, it was decided that their pre-deprivation hearing was required under the circumstances of this case. And that's what the issue is, which is common to the class. It's the most significant issue in the case. And if we're correct and the Matthews test dictates or requires a pre-deprivation hearing, well, then that ruling will apply to every single class member. And that's why this is a class case. And again, I think I kind of hit on this point already, but you did mention the Article 3 standing, and And again, our point on that and the dispute here, what's in dispute is not just whether Ms. Santiago saw a piece of paper or was alerted to a piece of paper, but what was the process that was provided for her and the other members of the class that was certified? And that is, were any of these members notified, whether it was via a window sticker or mail notice or any other means, of a hearing prior to the government taking their vehicles? And the answer to that question is no. And that is a common issue to everyone. And that's what we're challenging in this litigation. And we believe this case is very, very similar, if not on point, to the Memphis Light decision, because in that case, there was a notice sent to the customers at issue, informing them that, I believe, is their electricity would be shut off if they didn't pay their bills or what have you. But what the notice failed to inform the customers of was an internal administrative process to dispute that process. And the Supreme Court found that the failure to include that information rendered the notice insufficient under the due process clause. And that's what we have here. We have a notice, whether it was window sticker or the complete lack of a mail notice, that fails to advise a vehicle owner that they can have a pre-deprivation hearing. And in fact, the practice is not even to provide a pre-deprivation hearing for people without valid or current registration. And even if you look at the other cases that have interpreted Memphis Light, like West Covina, et cetera, those decisions only state that if those types of procedures are already embodied in an ordinance or a statute, they don't need to be included. But again, here, there is no ordinance, there is no statute, there's no publicly available means to that would alert plaintiffs and other members of this class that they could have a pre-deprivation hearing. And in fact, according to Ms. Hennessy, the city's own representative, they don't even provide for hearings for those individuals.
Mr. Zolna, I read your complaint before oral argument. I just skimmed it. I'm not sure the words pre-deprivation hearing appear anywhere in it. I may be wrong about that, and maybe while your adversary is rebutting, you can pull it up in Microsoft Word and do a find and point me to where that language is at. And the reason that's important is because it may change the substance of your position entirely. And that's the reason I'm pressing you on it. I'm not pressing you on it to give you a hard time, because I'm pressing you on it because I think that may be a much more substantial issue than this issue about stickers and mailings and what have you. And so I'm worried that you may have your finger on something, but that something's not in your complaint. It's not been presented to the district court.
I like I said, I can't speak right now. I just would have to look to the complaint. But what I can tell you is that what we do cite is some decisions in our complaint, including I believe Perry v. Village of Arlington Heights is one. And in that case, it talks about not just notice, but notice and opportunity for hearing. So to the extent our complaint may not use the word pre-deprivation hearing, we rely on, I believe they're cited in the complaint, cases that talk about notice and pre-deprivation hearing. And I can tell you that the briefing on our motion, the city certainly understood that to be our complaint, because when they moved to dismiss the complaint, they focused on. They focused on lack of hearing. They focused on the Matthews test, and that's what consumed the briefing on the motion to dismiss and the resulting decision. So if the complaint doesn't say something specifically, I can certainly tell you that it was certainly provided notice to the city of what our claim was. And I believe, I'd like to double check, but I believe we cite some cases in the complaint itself that kind of, I guess, incorporate the notice and pre-deprivation hearing issue. And everyone knew, including the city and the district court, when it ruled on the motion to dismiss, that was what our claim is all about. And it's only now on class certification that everyone kind of, at least the city, has kind of ignored that part of the case and has just said, look, she got a piece of paper, case over. But that's never been our case. You could send someone a notice that's 50 pages long, but if it doesn't allow for a pre-deprivation hearing, it's still violates due process, and that's what we're challenging.
So do you read the district court opinion to have certified two classes about the due process issue of a lack of hearing?
No, no.
Isn't that what we're, so that's what's on appeal though.
No. Let me clarify. This is only the tow class. The tow class has brought a due process claim. The vehicle disposal class is not a due process claim. It's not about whether someone actually received notice or not, because it's undisputed that both plaintiff and every single member of the class received the same post-tow predisposal notice in the same form and in the same manner. And the only reason notice is brought up in connection with that claim is for purposes of bringing the takings claim outside the purview of the police powers under the Supreme Court's decision in Venice. And in Venice, typically the city would have the right to confiscate a vehicle if they view it in violation of some law. But
let's go back to the tow class. So is it your view that the district court construed the heart of the allegation with the tow class to have nothing to do with stickers and mail and everything to do with pre-deprivation hearings? And if so, where do you see that in the district court opinion?
Well, I see it on page 11 where the notice argument is kind of the main argument of the city. Her daughter saw this window sticker. That's the city's main defense. They obviously raised that in the district court, and the district court disposed of that issue by saying, look, it doesn't matter. This is on page 11 of the district court decision. Even if Ms. Santiago received notice through Ms. Velez, she still can challenge the procedural sufficiency of that notice. And he cites to Memphis Light, which I believe is a case on point. So he did acknowledge the notice argument. He did acknowledge that we can challenge the procedural sufficiency of it. And I know for a fact, and I could pull the page up of our brief below, where we did point out to the judge, Judge Cannelli, that there was no hearing provided in the sticker notice. So it doesn't really matter whether it was a sticker notice, whether it was a lack of mailing. At the end of the day, there was no hearing accorded to Ms. Santiago before the government took her property. And I've just pulled up, if you look to paragraph 10, I do cite in the complaint these cases, Perry v. Village of Arlington Heights and Graff v. Nickel. There are two district court decisions that have basically found that the exact same process that's at issue here, simply providing a window sticker with no pre-deprivation hearing, violates due process. And that's how we've patterned our case after, is basically the Perry and the Graff decision. And by citing those in the complaint, it was clear to everyone that that was the theory of our case, and that was what was argued in the motion to dismiss, and that's what we intend to argue at summary judgment and going forward in this case. And like I said earlier, everyone knows that that's the issue, because that's what was litigated on the motion to dismiss. And I see my time is up. I didn't get to any of the vehicle disposal arguments. If you give me a minute, I can try to explain. Otherwise, I will defer.
I'll give you a minute. You can look it up, counsel.
Okay. Well, really, the vehicle disposal count, I just want to clarify, and the district court got it right. The district court understood what this claim was. It's the city that's trying to conflate it with a due process claim or a notice claim, or that we're just saying that they violated the ordinance, so that's unconstitutional. We're not saying any of that. This case is a takings claim that simply says that by taking someone's vehicle from them, selling it, and keeping all the money is a taking without just compensation. And typically, the city would have a good defense to such a claim by arguing that they simply exercise their police power under Venice, the United States Supreme Court decision in Venice. The only reason anything to do with notice gets brought up is because the city fails to comply with its own municipal code in terms of providing post-tow notice. And we're saying in that count that because the theory of our case is that because the city violated its own ordinance, it had no statutory authority to dispose of the vehicle, and therefore it takes this case outside the purview of the Bennis ruling, outside the police power exception set forth in Bennis. And it's undisputed, again, just like the vehicle tow practice, that this is the exact same practice that applies to everyone. The notice goes out in the same way. The city admitted that in discovery responses. It's the same notice. They sent it out the same way, same content, same timing. And the fact that they take a vehicle and sell it and keep all the proceeds is also the same for every single class member. So the city may argue that they may dispute the theory of our case, but at the end of the day, it's a claim that's common to the entire class. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Morales Boyle, I'll give you another minute as well.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll start with the tow class again. The vehicle disposal class is sort of the neglected of the two, but I hope to reach that too. But on the tow class, the claim has again shifted. It shifted from pre-litigation to the litigation to class cert to on appeal after the district court's decision, and now it's changed again. I don't have the complaint memorized. I don't see in the complaint a claim about pre-deprivation hearing. What perhaps more importantly at this stage, I don't see it addressed in the district court's decision at all. That is not the claim that the district court considered when it certified the tow class. It was about notice. It was about specifically about the method of notice. It was not about a pre-deprivation hearing. So that's a brand new claim.
Was it the pre-trial notice was so insufficient that it constituted a due process violation?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I missed the first part of your question.
I said whether the pre-trial notice was so insufficient that it constituted a due process violation.
Well, that could be a claim, but that's not the claim that was certified, which was about whether or not the city provided it by mail versus whether it provided it by sticker. But I will speak to the issue because there are facts related to this in the record already. What I think counsel is trying to say is that people who got the mail notice, which again precludes any facial challenge here because a big group of people receive both the sticker notice and the mail notice, but the mail notice refers to a hearing. Ms. Hennessy, in her declaration that was submitted as part of the class certification briefing, explains what that process is. And what the process is you can either call the office and tell them that you've moved your car, or you can show up at the office and tell them that you've moved your car. And if you tell them that you've moved your car, then they won't send a tow truck out to go get your car when the time expires. If you don't tell them that you moved your car, then they will send a tow truck out to get the car. But if the car's not there, they won't tow it. So they haven't established any right to a pre-deprivation hearing here. The way you avoid a 7-day abandoned vehicle tow, which Ms. Velez understood when she received the sticker notice, is you move your car within the time period. They try to make this in their brief an issue about what does apparently deserted mean, but there's actually been a couple different cases in the district court in years past that address what that means and reject vagueness challenges. What it means for your car to be apparently deserted is that there was a complaint about it, an investigator goes out and sees your car on the street where it was complained of, they give you a notice and say you have to move your car within 7 days or it's going to be towed. If you do not respond to that notice by moving your car, then it is apparently deserted. One more point, just to clarify the record on the issue of a hearing, the city provides a post-deprivation hearing for these tows. The notice that was sent to Ms. Santiago in the mail explains how you pursue an administrative hearing to contest that, hey, my car shouldn't have been towed. And there's no record that Ms. Santiago pursued a hearing here. In fact, she didn't. And there's no, in this new claim that's now been raised, no discussion of why the post-deprivation hearing wouldn't be sufficient. Regardless, the issues of actual notice and whether or not people contested, not to mention administrative exhaustion issues, are all going to come up if that's the issue, if that's the new claim. But in any event, it's not the claim that the district's court certified the tow class for. Quickly, on the facial challenge issue, I think it's clear that it's not a facial challenge, and I think we've explained that. Counsel gave an explanation for why it doesn't matter because the same analysis applies, but the error in the district court's decision is that the court used the idea that it was a facial challenge to say, hey, all individual issues are now irrelevant, and skip by the predominance analysis, and it's required to be a rigorous analysis. He listed the individual issues the city raised and skipped right by them based on the idea that a facial challenge means they are irrelevant. They're not irrelevant. That was a wrong conclusion on top of the wrong conclusion that this was a facial challenge. And on the issue of what the actual hearing is, it's records 73-1 and it's page ID 589-90 is where she describes how you avoid a tow, a 7-day abandonment tow, which is the same whether or not you receive the sticker notice or a mailed notice or both. On the vehicle disposal class, the district court's errors somewhat tracked the errors that the district court made for the tow class, because a lot of what the district court's decision does is sort of refer back to its previous discussion of the tow class in discussing the vehicle disposal class. So for instance, the court seems to have assumed that it didn't have to address individual issues because it was a facial challenge again, even though on the vehicle disposal class, even plaintiff never contended it was a facial challenge. And what I think that pattern of sort of similar errors is rooted in is there is this sort of parallelness between the two claims. And it's because the second claim, although plaintiff goes to great lengths to avoid it, at its heart really would be a due process claim, because her complaint is that the city didn't send, it's about the notices that the city mailed to her pre-disposal. She doesn't want to bring a due process claim because you can't base a due process claim on an alleged non-compliance with a state statute. The Archie decision and a group of other decisions we've discussed in our brief get to that point. So she doesn't have a due process claim there. So instead, she says it's a takings claim or an unjust enrichment claim. But what I don't see in their briefs, and I didn't hear today, is a case they can point to where there's a takings claim that's premised on the state or the city allegedly not strictly complying with a statutory provision, whether it's a notice provision or some other provision, that because the state or the government didn't comply with some statutory requirement, then what otherwise would be some other government power, exercise of government power, all of a sudden becomes an unconstitutional taking. Bennis addresses this, and interestingly, the D.C. Circuit, in a case cited in our reply brief, used Bennis to reject just such a takings claim in the disposal and impoundment context. And again, we're sort of getting into the merits of these claims and whether or not she has standing to bring these claims, or whether these claims as presented are valid legal claims. But what it gets at on the class certification issue is that the common issue that the district court identified, which is the adequacy of this two notices on 1 day procedure, no one's ever explained why that is going to be an issue at a trial of a multitude of individual takings claims, why that would impact the analysis of a takings claim, or why individual issues wouldn't predominate on a trial of unjust enrichment claims.
Counselor, your time has expired. Thanks to both counsel. Judge Sutter, do you have anything further for Mr. Zillian?
No, thank you.
No. Judge Scudder, I can point to one paragraph of the complaint if you'd mind, because you did ask if I could do that. And I could point you to paragraph 11 of our complaint, in which we kind of summarize our claim. We go through the cases and everything, and then we say, in short, the city takes vehicles with no warning or opportunity to contest the claim of abandonment prior to seizure. I think that is the gist of our claim. In fact, that's the summary of our claim and our complaint, and that's what we've been litigating for the past 2 years. Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel, and the case is taken under advisement. The court will be in recess for 10 minutes.